Are we going?
Into podcast.
Potter Who Cast.
But how's it called? Billis Major at your service.
Don't forget me.
Sarah, did you forget me?
Oh, let's go! That's class!
There is no such thing as...
Doctor Who, Series 5, Episodes 12 and 13. The Pandorica opens, and the Big Bang.
This is nice. I sure hope we both remember to not get locked into this cube. Maybe if I go back in time, I just insist that one of us remembers really strongly. You know, Nathan was here recently.
Did you go back in time?
Yeah, we'll go to Nathan when Nathan is here, and I'll stress you to remember not to lock us into the cube.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah. I remember that.
I don't.
Because it hasn't happened for you yet.
Yeah. What has happened is the Pandorica opens and the Big Bang. Broadcast on June 19th and June 26th, 2010. Toy Story 3 still top of the box office for both weeks. We can't do one final glorious Danny Houston moment because there's no link to Danny Houston in any of this. So
goodbye.
Bye, Danny. Bye.
Goodbye, Danny. We're going to talk about someone else next series. Some other random ass actor that David's going to decide to constantly bring up.
John Hawks.
I don't know why I'm talking like that. Like, I don't do that too. like I don't do that. And I keep bringing shit up that nobody cares about.
Well, let's bring up someone people do care about, which is the director of this, Toby Haynes. Obviously, recently off the back of Andor and Black Mirror. Before that, he was like a 5 episodes, but he does these two, then he does Christmas Carol, then he does season 6 opener. So he has like 5 consecutive episodes to himself. Directing the new Star Trek movie as well, which, you know. Good for him.
Is he though?
Doubtful. Everyone.
I'll believe it when I see it. Remember when it was supposed to be? Wasn't Quentin Tarantino like my last movie? Will be a Star Trek movie.
Was like, he was like, I want to direct a Star Trek movie, and it's gonna be a hard R, and it's gonna be they're gonna be crying. It was basically on the like Star Trek episode where they're all criminals or something in like the 40s, and then he was like, maybe I won't do that. And then it was going to be John Cooper. Oh, who the fuck was doing then? Written by Stephen Moffat. In a sentence, fucked up. Yeah, the Doctor. His greatest enemies have tricked him into getting into a cube using Amy's memories, but because a plastic Rory kills Amy by mistake, she goes into the cube to revive her, and then the TARDIS explodes because we'll find out later, and then the universe starts dying, and then the Doctor uses the cube to basically reboot the universe, but and Amy's parents as well, and then he kind of disappears, and Amy's parents obviously will be back for more appearances, definitely will happen.
Ironic.
I'm being facetious. They're never. Jay Sherman's never coming back. I'm sorry. Jay Sherman and whoever else the mother looks like.
Isn't his name like Aloysius Pond or something?
Yeah, Aloysius Pond.
What a name.
He's never coming back. He's dead. But yeah, Amy Rory.
Augustus Pond. Sorry, Augustus not Pond. Aloysius. Yeah. What are you talking about?
When do we get Aloysius? I don't even know. Anyway, Amy, Dr. Rory, go off.
Aloysius sounds like a name for.
They go off after on adventures after their wedding. The cold open here. Okay, this is this whole th- this this is good. This is superb, one might say. And going back to the point you made before, that like how like cinematic, like the Angel two-part episode, the first part of this, the first episode is so cinematic, down to like the lighting, like the camera choices, the staging. Like, it just feels like such a good cinematic event.
Yes,
I will say the Big Bang doesn't quite have the same visual.
No, by the time they're on that roof, you're like, and we've run out of money. We have you can pinpoint the exact moment when they run out of money. I will say, it is really funny because I was noticing that it's like in the first episode you have all these monsters, all your favorites are back.
The weevils.
The weevils. Why are the weevils there? Whatever. Doesn't matter. So all your favorites are back. They go and they trap him. And then when it's like, and then they all died. And then you see what? You see a stone Dalek, half a stone Cyberman, and then everyone else is just a pile of dust.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have time. They don't have the money to make a stone weevil. They're not going to do it. They're never gonna fucking do it.
They should have.
But yeah. So,
my question to you on that is, so let's just focus. I want to focus first on the whole kind of, you know, reveal that, oh, this has actually been a trap. That the monsters make like a stereotypical Doctor Who episode to trick the Doctor into thinking he's won. And then they're like, actually, you fucked up. Although then in turn they do actually create the, it's kind of funny that like it just goes to show how stupid everyone is, that like their whole plan is actually the cause of the reason for their whole plan. It's really good. But do you think there was like one location they all agreed to meet in to plan this out, or was it on Zoom? Was that like Dalek Phil's basement that they all went to? You know, he's got like a Dalek bar.
I want to think that, like, because when you think about their plan, it is actually really easy. Like, I wanted to see the scene right after they close the box, where like the Cybermenter's diet goes like, was that like way too easy? Anyone else feel like that was way too easy? Because all we did was, also they didn't all need to be there. If you think about it, they're all there and they're all like telling him why they do it. But they don't. They're not really. You know, it's like, It's a moment that's great, and it's really fun to watch, and it really, you know, makes the whole universe feel alive. To have the Centaurans come back, and even the Weevils come back, even the Psychrax come back, it does feel like, oh, this is like a living, breathing world. The thing that gets complicated is the first half of this two-parter is so much about the box. It is actually a miss, and they're really clever about Moffat's really clever, because he never makes the guiding force of the episode is a mystery box question. It is basically, what's in the box, right? You're basically going, what's is in that box? Fucking box. And then part two is, I am the box. but then the reason Big Bang doesn't really match up is because Big Bang has to kind of introduce a whole new set of the issues for them to solve and explain them, because if you think about it, the Pandorica is made because the TARDIS explodes, but it's not the same people making it. So we know who makes the TARDIS explode. And we also know why they make the TARDIS explode. But then when you take into account that everyone else saw the TARDIS exploding and then went, let us make the Pandorica. And so this episode really smartly introduces that in this episode, solves that in this episode. And then the second episode has the job of like not just solving the issues that the cliffhanger set up, that the Doctor is in a box and Amy's dead and Rory's a Roman. It has to solve these issues, but also has to explain what happened and how they're going to solve it. And so it really feels like there's so much stuff happening over such a constrained amount of time in that episode. And everything takes place in that fucking museum. And it all feels so, like, Oh, tight and ironic enough for an episode about being stuck inside a giant box, claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm.
You almost wish that they kind of switched things around, and this was the big, like, universe-spanning episode, just for us to see the real damage of the explosion, whereas the Pandartica opus was the more constrained, claustrophobic episode to sort of match the idea of, like, there's something in this box that's coming out, and it's really scary.
Mm-hmm. I think as well, I don't really think they need to have a stone Dalek in Big Bang walking around being like, I will kill you and then I'll die. And I'll kill you again and I'll die. I think there's like so much like, you know, there's already enough implied threat from the fact that like the Doctor's like, you know, we are the last remaining bits of life in this universe. We're going to die at some point because it's catching up to us. If you like, you have like a built-in kind of, you know, kind of countdown clock. The thing as well is that something we got to take note of is that one of the aliens at the big kind of alliance group is the one that Grantham was hanging out with in Sarah Jane. Although I don't think you can actually see him in like, the crowd shots, but he is there. Which means Grantham.
He is there, just outside the screen. He's in laughing at my jokes.
He waited in the spaceship. He didn't want to get out, so he's in there. He's got the window cranked down. His favorite tunes are playing. Actually, interesting enough, from the whole group, only Terry Nation's credit is like, you know, created by whatever, which I assume, yeah,
because the Terry Nation made a deal with the devil, mm-hmm. also known as the BBC. And he will forever, like, fucking, if Daleks are ever turn out to be real, they will be credited as created by Terry Nation. Like, that's how ironclad that deal is.
Okay. Dalek fleet, minimum 12,000 battleships armed to the teeth. Ah, but we've got a surprise on our side. They'll never expect three people to attack 12,000 Dalek battleships, because we'd be killed instantly, so it would be fairly short surprise. Forget surprise.
Doctor, cyber ships.
No, Dalek ships. Listen to them. Those are Dalek ships.
Yes, Dalek ships and cyber ships.
Well, we need to start a firefight. Turn them on each other. I mean, that's easy. It's the Daleks. They're so cross.
Sontaran, four battle fleets.
Sontaran. Talk about cross. Who stole all their handbags?
Tyranitar, Slovene, Chelonian, Nestine, Dravin, Sycorax, Hemagos, Zygon, Atraxi, Draconian. They're all here for the Pandarica.
What are you? What could you possibly be?
Let's just talk, I guess, about as well. Like, the cold open for this one, for like the first episode, is so dynamic and exciting.
It's
and,
a very know. Smart idea. It makes me wonder why no one has done this again. Just having every character come back and be like, and I saw this. I mean, it is funny because you have Vincent and everyone goes, Vincent. And then you have the robot and Winston, everyone goes, robot and Winston Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Liz Tan and she literally has to be like, I'm the bloody queen, because you're kind of like, who's this?
Why is she hanging out in this, I think it was a cheese factory or something. I don't know.
Yeah, cheesecake factory.
It was a haunted cheesecake factory in the UK. They opened it up and then the space whale just like crashing.
Yeah, why is the Royal Archives so destroyed? Whatever, I don't care. I don't want to ask questions about fucking Starship UK. I just don't care about them.
But yeah, it's like, it's such a, like, you get this, and you have like, you know, Dorium as well in its little, space bar thing. We'll get to him again, but that's like a really good bit of world building as well. Like, you know, there's a every universe has its own cantina, you know. I just think it's so, like, I think the first part does such a great job of, as you said, like, building out the world and being like, you know, it feels like an actual world because all these people are coming together, and, you know, you're getting even those visual kind of references, like, as you said, Sycorax, but also the pile of fish were there as well.
Yes.
Which I wonder if they spoke to the Sycorax and were like, hey guys, we didn't get paid the last time. Could you pay us there? the whole thing, like, I think it's just like, as I said, it's such a cinematic episode because you get, like, you know, that really beautiful shot of all the ships overhead coming, converging down in Stonehenge, and then I don't really think the like, we can talk about the speech as well. I think the speech obviously becomes like the kind of big takeaway from all this, because, you know, you have like Colin Baker and Paul McGann and everyone doing their own take. The speech, I think, is good. But I think there's so much oomph in that. And as you said, then for the second one to be like, you know, we're on a rooftop, we're in a corridor, we're in another corridor, we're in a house, we're in another corridor. It just feels a bit kind of, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like there's a lot of connective visual tissue there.
Because it is more of a wordy episode. Mm-hmm. It really just feel like, okay, it really does feel like somebody went to Moffat and said, the budget is not that high, so you're really going to have to put your right tussie into it. You have to put your whole writer tussie into it and write the shit out of it. Mm-hmm. Mafusi, you're right. His Mafusi. He put his Mafusi, all his Mafusi into it to save the day.
That's a Jadoon word, I think.
But the thing is, it really is astonishing just how many genres and visual styles the first episode goes through. Like, there's that bit with the fucking Cyberman head that's basically like a slasher movie. Mm-hmm. And it was really well directed. Like, when she's holding the head and it opens and a skull comes out and you can tell that it wants to, like, put Amy's head in the skull, I was like, damn, that's scary. When it's, like, chasing her and then the sword stabs through the door, I was like, damn, that's shocking. And then you get the ghost house section, which is when River goes into Amy's house and puts it all together.
That's so creepy, the way they filmed
that. Nothing happens in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of like, oh, there's no like monster shows up and attacks. It is just her going through an empty house we've seen before and putting it all together. And it's like, there's so much going on that the Big Bang started reverting back to, you know, oh, we're just, here we go. We're going to talk. We're going to solve. It's the classic Doctor Who thing. We're going to solve this problem by talking because we can't afford anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Moffat very wisely realizes that he never does this again, right? Every single next finale from his seasons, he clearly is saving the money for the finale to make it as big as his ambition. Or he's doing actually the opposite, where the first half is much more restrained and contained, and the second half is the one that goes all big. And I almost feel like that's because, you know, of this. For even though we're like criticizing it, it is important to note this episode really works ultimately. Mm-hmm.
It really does
work.
The way it's structured is so interesting, yeah.
You come out of it with the same sensation you come out like when you eat a really good ice cream cake. Mm-hmm. You're like, this was a really good ice cream cake, but it was just ice cream in cake form. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a cake, you know? The first episode is a cake. The second episode is an ice cream cake. No shit against ice cream cakes. I love ice cream cakes. But it is very much like we have to solve this in like as a constrained enough manner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they've spoken about the budget. I think I read something where Toby Haynes is like, we didn't have a bigger budget and it was actually less than the other episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me, Stephen Moffat, please release your version of The Writer's Tale. I really want to hear how the production of this series was. Because when it ended, I was like astonished. Like, it's a pretty flawless season of television.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty flawless season of Doctor Who. Even with the little like spots here and there. Your Beasts Below, your Vampires of Venice. But overall, you know, it came across like so well formed and so well designed. And the reason you don't notice these constraints and you don't feel bad about them is because, you know, there's so much stuff that like wraps up and pays off in very satisfying ways. Mm-hmm. You have Rory coming back. You have the Lone Centurion. You have, you know, this is what the Pandorica is. These are all the characters we're coming back to do it. You have the Romans. You have the Autons. You have everything. It is one of those episodes that made me go like, oh, right. Like, this is what Doctor Who is. It's a show where anything can happen. And every once in a while, anything does happen. And this is what that looks like. You know, you're going from one time zone to the other. She's pretending to be Cleopatra. I don't know how to say Cleopatra. Sorry. She's pretending to be Cleopatra. And she's hypnotizing people. And then they go to Stonehenge, which they went to the real Stonehenge. And then, you know, they do this and they do that. And she's stuck in a time loop. And there's the stone Dalek. And there's those stars in the sky and all that stuff. And it's all, you know, like, it's so, you're just looking and you're like, wow, the fact that this all works in a character level is astounding and should be celebrated.
It is, I think, I think it's his best finale, but I think he has better finales, but also I think it's the best, like, in terms of, like, kind of tying up.
He has one better finale than this.
Yeah. But
he has one.
In terms of tying up an entire season in, like, one kind of, you know, concise way, I think this is the best example across the board, I think, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's kind of doing what Journey's End tried to do, but it's doing, I think, in a much kind of more interesting way, because, you know, Journey's End's quite, like, you know, bombastic and, like, you know, here's a giant kind of, you know, destructive.
All your favorites are back.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, I mean, all our favorites are back here. You know, there's
Slavine. I love the Blowfish.
Yeah. The Blowfish is there. As I said, the Hoix is there. The Weevils, who invited them, they're still there. I don't know what. I can't imagine, like, when they had their big meeting, but, like, you know, they went to, like, Cyberman XYZ, Z's big cookout, and they all had a beer, and they all sat around talking, like, how do we do this? Can't imagine the Weevils were very welcome at that shindig. I was saying that they probably got excluded a lot from that meeting. But everyone's like, it feels like such, like, a kind of, I guess, actually, it's just a great two-parter.
Sorry, Dr. The Pandorica takes the universe. But bad news, everyone. Because guess who? Listen, you lot, you're all whizzing about. It's really very distracting. Could you all just stay still a minute? Because I am talking!
Now, the question of the hour is, who's got Pandorica? Answer, I do. Next question. Who's coming to take it from me? Come on! Look at me. No plan, no backup, no weapons worth a damn. Oh, and something else I don't have. Anything to lose. So, if you're sitting up there in your silly little spaceship with all your silly little guns, and you've got any plans on taking the Pandorica tonight, just remember who's standing in your way. Remember! Every black day I ever stopped you, and then, do the smart thing.
Let somebody else try first.
The thing you said about stars, there are no stars. There's no such thing as stars is also what Torture fans said when Miracle Day was announced. And they had to figure out where it was going to be. Second time I made a joke. One of the interesting things that we get as well is we get a sort of teaser for what's to come in the form of a very, very much a temp track. Voiceover voice that sounds a bit like, I don't even know what it sounds like, saying silence, you fool. Sounds like Palpatine, I guess. Obviously they'll change that voice next year into something a bit more hard to understand, but you know, it's I think it's interesting, like, he's taking time to, like, draw a line under, you know, this part of the story, but he's also saying, look, there's more to come, and, you know,
right,
we'll get to the silence part of that next time, but, like, here we have, you know, here is part one. It's a kind of storytelling I love, this like multi-year like building up a saga where, like, you know, you get answers at some points, but it's never like, you know, you're denied answers. It's more like, you know, we're gonna take this section and we're gonna put this section away for now, and you can get like more, you know, you can build up to more kind of exciting stuff.
This comes into like that question that I've asked you so many times, which is how much did he plan? That's why I'm like, please release a book, because I really want to know how much he planned, because all of his Matt Smith finales feel like, you know, there's a bigger thing he knows, and every finale he's revealing you a third of it. A third, a third, a third. But the thing that makes it really good, and that separates it from, say, a J.J. Abrams mystery box style story, is that every third is satisfying in itself. Now we know the big event, which is the Big Bang, you know, the Pandorica, the cracks, you know, the cracks are now sealed. But now the question is, who did the cracks? And we're going to find that out next season. And the thing that's really smart, in my opinion, is that third season, the question isn't who did it, is why did they do it?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of going what, who, why, which makes this feel like you're building towards something, but also doesn't run into the problem that most of these stories have, which is when you do get answers, they don't feel satisfying. It doesn't feel like you're putting together like a complete puzzle made out of three individually complete puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it really is startling to me just how much everyone is firing on all cylinders in this, like at every level, to the point that every time I think about something that I want to comment negatively about this episode, I'm like, yeah, but even that I kind of like, you know, like, Matt Smith flying around, teleporting around and doing the whole thing with the Fez, you know, is that tiring because I've seen three more years of him, or is that tiring because it's tiring in the episode? I don't know. But even in the episode, I'm like, it's kind of funny and it's kind of cool. And it's a really smart visual way to tell people where they are in the story. Because when he comes back with the mop and the Fez, and then he goes back and loses the mop, and then he goes back and he loses the Fez, and then he gives her the thing. You know, you're kind of like tracking, and then later you have Rory be like, that's what you look like when you went back in time and told me. It really lets the audience feel like they're being really smart. Like, oh, yeah, I get it. I get what this is going for. And in the sense of, like, we're talking about the lower budget, the more constrained version of the story, it also makes those small moments feel bigger, you know, because you're putting it together. You're putting things together on both a macro and a micro level. So you're putting things together in terms of like what the whole story is, but also you're going, now we know why he's wearing a fez and a mop in that first scene. Now we know why he's hurt in that other scene. Now we know why he does this in that other scene. You know, it's really, really just crystal clear moment to moment screenwriting.
It's just like, yeah, it's just so good and so smart. And it just it works so well as a cohesive unit that, like, it's just, it's kind of hard to deny that it is, you know, it's just hard to deny, full stop. I think
you can't be like, oh, this sucks, because you're kind of like, honestly, it kind of rocks. It did exactly what it needed to do. One thing I think we need to talk about, the one thing that has really affected this show more than anything else, is the Stonehenge speech.
I will.
What do you
say,
think of that speech?
I'll give you one thing about it, which is that. Okay, two things. One, I think it's maybe that episode's kind of low point visually, because those shots aren't matching up at all.
Yes.
And it really bothers me when they cut back to, like, you know, it's just him with a light behind him, and then they cut to like the really wide shot and you can see like the lines. I think it's a clever idea. It's a clever subversion of everything, because, like, they know that he's going to try and, like, doctor his way into getting them to go away, so they let him have his speech. It's a thing that I think works well in series 7 as well, where, like, he gives a big speech and it doesn't work, and then, but in terms of this one, like, he thinks it works. And I think it's a really good subversion for us as well, to be like, you know, we know what happens, but like if you're watching this the first time and you see like the speech and like they're all flying away, I guess, you know, media literacy wise, you probably know that there's more to happen. But it gives like this kind of doctor moment that then gets subverted because you realize, oh, they wanted him to, like, you know, get cocky and get confident that like he was going to save the day when, you know, he was just playing into their whole trap, playing into their whole kind of little game
there. Right.
I think it's like the Vince and the Doctor thing where like the way it kind of overshadowed things became a little unmanageable and a little comical and a little embarrassing, how like, you know, if you're going to a convention, you're like, hey, Colin Baker, here's a out of a speech that isn't from your thing. I don't want to hear you talk about yourself. Please just give the speech that I can put on YouTube. It gets a bit kind of cloying, I think, and a bit kind of embarrassing. But like in that moment, I think it's a good moment in the episode. Yeah.
It also is, first of all, for you to look at that speech, it's a very big media literacy moment, because the immediate next scene is him being like, yeah, I just did that to earn us some time.
Mm-hmm.
And then for people, what happened, I think, is that people saw that it went, the doctor does big speeches. And so the big speeches became the thing that every doctor after 11 is known for, which I think kind of injured 13's perception, because she doesn't really have big speeches. But also, that is not a thing. That's like, the doctor does speeches sometimes, but never on this level. Like, I can't really think of 10 having a moment as big as this. Where maybe he'll do a big speech to one or two characters, but he won't do it to like an entire crowd, because this is him performing. This is a performance, basically. And so that's why it feels so weird when you ask other doctor actors to do this speech, because it's like, you do understand that this particular scene is a performance. It's a play. Like, he is pretending to be this image they want him to be, and at the same time he's playing someone else and they are playing him. So you're not supposed to be like, everyone should do this speech, in my personal opinion. But you know, like, it doesn't matter, like, that these things, like, they transcend their existence as like TV scenes, and they became, you know, gifs. They became gifs and they became reshareable videos. And people saw it and they went, oh, that's cool, I want to see more of that. And when the doctor doesn't do that, they're like, when was the doctor going to do another big speech? And that's how you get things like The Rings of Akaten, where he fixes his bow tie angrily and says, it's time for me to do a big speech.
But then the speech fails because the monster's like, I don't care. But then Clara does a speech like straight away afterwards, and the monster's like,
Exactly. It's like, it becomes like a joke. Isn't there a joke where someone is, which episode is this, that the doctor starts doing a big speech, like, I'm the oncoming star, and then you go, oh, and you're just a
Day of the Doctor, when he's looking for the Zygon, he's like, he sees a rabbit, yeah. He's like, you're just a rabbit, aren't you? And then the rabbit just runs away, yeah.
Yes, that's it. That's the thing I'm talking about. It's like, it becomes a joke in itself. And I think Moffat noticed this, and that's why if you look at something like 12, his big speeches are either to himself or to Kate Stewart, and that's it. So he's kind of like, yeah,
you know who saw the speech and was like, that guy's really good, I'm gonna put in my movie,
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. The whole story is like, oh yeah, I was watching TV and I switched channels, and then there was this guy yelling at spaceships. I started watching, and I was like, this guy's really good, and then I cast him in my movie. Weird scene for him to be like, wow, I gotta watch this. I guess it makes sense. If I had a vortex manipulator and I was going back in time, I would go back in time to this, it's 2009, they're making this episode. I go back in time, I'd say to Arthur Darvill, listen, Arthur, you're doing great, you're doing brilliant, okay, you know, you got a great kind of character arc here. if Nicholas Briggs comes to you and says, I want you to do two box sets, The Lonesome Tour.
No. I think he should do it. He should do it.
He's not doing
it. I want to listen to them. Are they not bad? Are they not good? I thought they were good.
They are, but like, he has more class than to be doing that. He does.
Do 17 of them.
I'm becoming a Nick Briggs heel account at this point, but like, he has more respect. He's really good in this. I think he really sells, you know, every aspect of this. As you said, like, I don't think anyone's bad. I think everyone's like on top form, like across the board. You know, Darvill, Gillen, Kingston, Briggs, actually, because he has that little cameo as well at the museum. He's like, Amy Pond, come back to your mother. I think everyone is just, you know, I think it's just, I don't know if I, like, how else it's just to say, like, I think everyone's great and I think everyone's good. I think there's a, I don't know, I think it's just good. I think it's good. I think it's just hampered by, a bit by how Big Bang goes, and although the end of the Big Bang has some of my favorite moments, I think, ever. We talk about speeches. The speech he gives in her room when she's asleep, where you get the whole thing of, like, this is an old man in a young man's body, like the way his eyes are kind of like, mm-hmm. kind of glaze mm-hmm. over a bit, and the way he moves his mouth when he's giving that speech is so good. I think I know we alluded to it before, I think it's really, really fun and good to be like, oh yeah, that continuity error that maybe two of you noticed was actually, you know, a very important moment in, like, the grand scheme of things. It's something I wish they do more often, like this kind of little like secret, you know, developments. I think that whole sequence is great. I think it's just, I don't know. It's just good. It's just good. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, it's like, all my notes are just like, this is great. This is brilliant. This is superb. Couple of different things. The TARDIS painting used to be, you know, huge on Etsy and Tumblr. You don't see it anymore, but, like, you know, I remember when people were selling, like, you know, posters and jigsaw puzzles and t-shirts and mugs of this one fake Van Gogh painting.
This fake Van Gogh. First of all, let me just say something really quick. That painting does not look like Van Gogh.
It doesn't.
It does not look like his style. It looks like somebody painted something and said, told an AI to, like, make it Van Gogh's style. Because it basically has the swirls, but also he wouldn't paint something this, like, I don't feel like that, it doesn't look like his. It just looks like somebody, like, did a couple swirls. Anyway. It's a really weird thing. And it serves its purpose. You know, it exists because it needs to, like, bring back Van Gogh, and it works, and that everyone's commenting upon it. You know, unfortunately, nobody says, you know, there's two titles, Gallifrey Fall, TARDIS Explodes at the Pandorica.
No,
it's actually just one title. The curator should show up at the when they're looking at it. Winston Churchill's like, I'm gonna commit some genocide. You know, really, if you really might.
The other thing as well is that there was a Pandorica toy that they released. It was like one of those, like, you know, build a figure sets, and all the discs on the side were target novelization audiobooks, which is a fun idea, but also there was no way of protecting those discs then from, like, you know, decay and dust and stuff. Sorry, I just got a notification on my phone for Manhunt on Apple TV Plus, which I need to watch because I know you said.
Oh my god, I really like that show. Mm-hmm. I really like it. But I should note, I need to specify, I'm a history idiot. So some people might watch that show and say, this just feels like somebody telling me the Wikipedia page about the manhunt for John Wilkes Booth. And I'm like, yes, I love that. I want more of that. So keep that in mind, listeners, if you're thinking about watching Manhunt on Apple TV+.
They should do John Wilkes Booth episode.
Do not say no. No, I don't want.
They should though. Like you get like John Hawks in there again. Yeah, and there's also like a load of Pandorica Alliance toys you get.
I can pitch you a story with John Wilkes Booth. The Doctor survives an assassination attempt, and he finds out that someone has recruited history's biggest assassins to try and kill him.
John Wilkes Booth, I love that.
like that John Wilkes Booth, Lee Harvey Oswald, the CIA. Cut that out. I mean, I'm imagining just that scene from Empire Strikes Back where Darth Vader talks to the bounty hunters, but it's like a Dalek talking to John Wilkes Booth, like, you must kill the Doctor.
And John Wilkes Booth's like, it's beyond my comprehension. I've seen God now because I've been introduced to a talking robot. You know, the Alliance, there's so many people in the Alliance, you know. The Weevils, I love that man. Slitheen Hunt. They know that it's not the in the episode they say Slitheen, but like the wiki says Slitheen Hunters, because I think they were like, oh, well, you know, Slitheen's a family name, it's not a species name. You know, it can't be there. Chelonians, who are like novel villains. Pteroleptals, who are from Fifth Doctor. There's so many people there. It's a lot of fun for them to be like, you know, everyone's here, and then, you know, obviously they can't show everyone, but like, again, that whole Alliance idea is so good. I don't know. I'm kind of out of notes. I don't know. I just think what we've said is like it's a good episode. It's good, two good episodes that are are just kind of good. I don't know. So do you want to pivot to what we're doing?
Wait, I just got to ask a couple of things before we move on. So, wasn't there supposed to be a Lone Centurion Volume 3 thing? Or because I remember reading what was it? Like a leaked Big Finish release schedule, and there were a bunch of stuff that I was interested in. Like there was Sarah Jane Smith spinoff.
I believe
was that fake.
I believe they did a monk that was fake. And I'll go back in time and remind you to bring this up because then we can reveal this to you. So remember to go back in time. Yeah, I think that was revealed as being fake. Because it's for 2023 and there's stuff in here that didn't happen.
Damn it.
Yeah, like the Kevin McNally Jericho box set that apparently was going to happen that didn't happen. And there's a. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in here that didn't happen. I'm going through there's a Reddit list of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, that didn't happen in the
end. Damn it.
Because I went back in time, I told him not to do it.
No, I want my Jericho box set.
Not with him in it, but like
You
can recast Jericho pretty quickly.
Jacob Dudman, here we go.
I'm very, very like gruff, like fake old man voice. Like I'm Jacob. He wouldn't say I'm Jacob Dudman unless he got confused into the booth and accidentally said his name every single time. So it was Jericho.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Do you have any more questions, or do you want to move on to what we're doing?
I think the best way to describe this episode is part one is the villain's going, I like to see old Ducky Who wriggle his way out of this one. Part two is he wriggles his way out of this one, and they go, ah, well, nevertheless. So that's it. That's all I want to say. All right, David, just hold on a second. I need you to be quiet. I planted something in an earlier episode, episode 2. I told everybody that I would check out this app called Blue Box Simulator. It is... Sorry, David. So those who don't know, I took a look at it. It's a really cool app. So I'm really happy to say that. I found it on the App Store, but you can get it for Android or PC or Mac. And it is basically a TARDIS simulator. Now, they have so many controls and so many options. It honestly feels like the closest we're ever going to get to like an actual TARDIS simulator, which I feel is what many of us really, really want to see out of a Doctor Who video game. So I definitely recommend checking it out. Once again, the name is Blue Box Simulator. You can find it pretty much anywhere. And it is an absolute blast of an app. Totally recommend it.
So much like how over here in this country, they a burger chain called Supermax bought up Quiznos and Pizza Hut, Papa John's, and combined them into one. Yeah, that happened.
Oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah, there's also there's a Lidl near where I live that the bottom floor is a Pizza Hut, or Domino's. It's like a bottom floor Domino's, top floor Lidl. It's really weird, really, really weird. We're bringing the wrap up into the finale. We're not doing a separate wrap up because it was also like, you know, there's no point doing like a 50-minute record about like, you know,
yeah,
here's our list. So we're gonna bring the wrap up in here because we've also talked about like how we the season's like, you know, a really good kind of, you know, block of television, mm-hmm. really cohesive, really exciting, really kind of, you know.
Oh my god, wait, I forgot to rank them. Hold on.
Well,
can you just give you a second?
I'll vamp while you're
Hold on. Yeah, just give you a second.
Yeah. So, like, Series 5 has just been absolutely incredible. I think it's been, like, the best we've covered. I think it's, you can feel like a really, really kind of, you know, big step up in, like, you know, tone, in approach, in, you know, visual and, you know, textual kind of advancements, I guess. Really good guest stars like Toby Jones and Bill Patterson and, you know, Ian McNeice, I guess, as well. Was it Ian McNeice? Yeah, it was Ian McNeice. Yeah, I was confusing Ian McNeice and Richard Griffiths. And, like, you know, everyone else who guested, I guess. There's too many people to thank. But yeah, I think it's just been a great series. It's been a really great series. I'll continue the vamp for a second.
Almost there.
I meant to mention as well, the behind the scenes of Pandora opens on the Blu-ray, and you can check this for yourself. They filmed all the interviews in like 16:9, they convert the footage to 16:9, and it looks so cinematic compared to like what we have. Although some of it's like kind of squashed into the frame, it looks like it just makes it look really, really impressive, which, you know, I think they should do more often. Release like a movie cut of this stuff with that kind of aspect ratio. Yeah.
All right, I'm ready.
Okay, cool. do you want to go first or will I go first? We'll count down from 10 to 1 rather than.
Is it 10? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, 10. All right. Yeah. So my number 10
mm-hmm.
is Vampires of Venice.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a nothing episode. I can't really be mad at it.
I'm there with you. It's also my number 10. I think it's just kind of boring and muddled. I think it is, like, in terms of direction, I think it has made the worst director, one of the lot. But though, it's not like I could still watch it again, but like it's not interesting.
I wouldn't say it's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But out of this particular strong group, I think it's the worst.
Yeah.
Number 9 is The Beast Below. I think it etches Vampire Venice a little bit solely by having more weird things happen. it was much funnier to watch, much funner to watch the doctor climb, try to escape a giant whale's mouth
mm-hmm.
and yell at Amy than it is to watch him climb a CGI, like clearly green screened top of a church.
And then like a switch to turn everything off. My number 9 is actually Victory of the Daleks. And that's purely because I think that's incredibly boring. And it's when I kind of struggled to rewatch because I was like, this is just kind of boring. But it does have some bits where I'm like, that's not as boring, but it's just kind of boring.
I actually am going to say that my number 8 is Victory of the Daleks because I have a kind of like a soft spot for Victory of the Daleks, even mm-hmm. though I trashed it in the episode. If forced to pick, I will still put Victory of the Daleks a little bit further because I like, I'd say the first 20 minutes of that episode, I think is really, really good up until when the Daleks reveal themselves to be the Daleks.
Mm-hmm.
an entire bit leading up to that where the doctor's like, these are the Daleks, they are evil. Everyone's like, what are you talking about? They're the Iron Hand, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that entire bit, I think, is much more interesting than more people give it credit. Most people give it credit for. Mm.
My number eight, Smilers, more like Frowners. It's Beast Below. Yeah. What you said, basically. Yeah.
Basically, we have the same bottom three. Yeah. Should be organized. I would say that starting from seven, I would say these are all good.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you exactly when the great part starts, but I would say these are good with some blemishes, but overall very enjoyable. And my number seven is The Hungry Earth and Cold Blood.
Mm.
Very surprised at how much I enjoyed it, but I do think we talked about how the second half of the episode kind of flounders a lot compared to the first half. And so that the imbalanced nature of it kind of drags it down a little bit for me.
Yeah, it's number seven for me. This might be controversial. It's all about your number sevens, because my number seven is Vincent and the Doctor.
Ooh.
That one's just like, I've never really gelled with that one. Like Tony Curran aside, Tony Curran and the Shadow there aren't really great. It's not one I really particularly vibe with on a general basis most of the time. I'd vibe a bit more here, but like, wasn't my cup of tea. And then I dance around like Spike Lee.
You know what the problem is that I think we can talk about now that we're talking about the whole show? I think its existence as the episode right after Rory's being erased from time, mm-hmm. and the fact that it's like, we'll talk about it, but it's more of like a side story.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of like, there's so much electricity and like volume and like speed going out of Hungry Earth and Cold Blood, and then you hit Vincent and the Doctor and kind of goes brrr, and then you hit the next episode, The Lodger, and it kind of goes brrr, but it still goes brrr a little bit. So there's that. My number six is Vincent and the Doctor. So I just said that, all of that. So it's number seven, Hungry Earth, number six, Vincent and the Doctor. For the same reasons you said.
Yeah.
Why would I put it above Hungry Earth?
Yeah,
I think Tony Curran is such a powerhouse guest star performance that it kind of elevates the episode just a little bit more over Hungry, and Hungry Earth Cold Blood doesn't have that as much.
My number six is an episode I think is just perfectly fine. It's hasn't got a credit or writer for some reason. It's The Lodger. James Corden. Wow. James Corden, I guess, innocent. I don't know. It's fine. It's nothing like it. If I was like, you know, I want to stick on an episode, I wouldn't stick on The Lodger, but like, I wouldn't like turn down the opportunity to watch it again. You know, it's one of those kind of ones.
I'm surprised same thing happened, because my number five is The Lodger. I think if your number five is The Hungry Earth, then we're running into the same situation where we pick the same episodes and we put them in different order. Is it?
The
Hungry Earth?
Is.
Okay.
It's the same thing as well. As like the second episode kind of just ruins any promise the first one had. And then kind of.
But the first episode is so strong that I can see why you put that above Visit the Doctor and The Lodger. My opinion of The Lodger is that, you know, looking back on it, I'm shocked at how good James Corden is, but it still is missing like the needed, like it doesn't stick the landing for me fully. It's an episode that's like, what if the doctor had to live like a normal life for a couple of days, but then it keeps going back to that fucking like a spaceship in the attic, and it just never really resolves into something like worth all that buildup, in my opinion, personally. My number four, and this is what I think it begins the great section of my list. These are all great episodes, with maybe one or two small things I don't like about them. But these are episodes I think from now on, you know, if I ever want to like, if somebody says, you know, you can only show me three episodes from each season, it'll come from these next four here. So my number four is The 11th Hour. It is probably the best We talked about this in the episode. It is probably the best new Doctor story, first Doctor story, because it is just firing in all cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
For everything.
Mm-hmm. We're not being the Dandy Houston allegations or the same mind allegations, because my number 4 is also the 11th hour.
Ooh.
Yeah, for those reasons as well. Yeah. I'm just realizing we could have the exact same top 3 as well. Like the exact
oh,
same
no, I think we do. All right, here we go. My number 3 is the Pandorica opens the Big Bang. Is that your number 3?
It's not.
Okay. I put it at number 3 because, like we talked about, the Big Bang, you go into the Big Bang with so much speed, and I think it does not fully match the ambition of the episode that came before it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Pandorica opens is like, it's like, you know, part Indiana Jones, part, you know, mystery, part haunted house movie, part slasher movie. It all comes together to make something that is uniquely Doctor Who. And the Big Bang, like we said, it is Moffat putting his whole Mafusi into it to solve something with nothing but words and people talking in corridors.
Mm-hmm.
It's still fun, people talking corridors, but it's still people talking corridors.
I have to break the news to you that the trailer just dropped.
We'll watch it and react to it at the end.
Yeah, I just saw a screenshot from it. It was very funny. My number 3 called Toby Jones the DJ, which it was so unfair that dropped after, is that Toby Jones was doing a DJ set in some
random We saw a photo of that, and we all went like, damn.
But Toby Jones is doing a DJ set, because number 3 is Amy's Choice. Good episode. There's just some bits with it like don't kind of stick the landing for me to put it any higher, but I think it is pretty good.
Yeah. It's ironic because my number 2 is not Amy's Choice. It is Time of the Angels, Flesh and Stone. Mm. An episode that I remember coming in thinking, oh, this is going to suck. I remember this sucking. This is going to be the worst. And then I watched it and I was like, what? Who lied to me? The devil works in mysterious ways, because it made me believe that this was bad. It was not. It's really, really good. It is so much fun. I am astonished about how much I like that episode.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that it is my number 2.
Mm-hmm. My number 2 is Pandorica Opens Big Bang. We've already spoken enough about it. I don't have to speak any more about it.
So that means that my number 1 is Amy's Choice. And your number 1 is Time of the Angels, is that it?
Yeah.
Now, I feel me saying my number 1 is Amy's Choice is a very safe choice, ironically enough, because everyone recognizes the greatest in that episode. But I want you to tell me why Time of the Angels is your number 1.
Because
I'm curious.
It's the same reason we spoke before. It's just, it feels so different and confident and exciting and scary and... You know, it develops those characters, those villains, in such an interesting way. And I think this it appeals to me in the sense of the person who loves, like, you know, those kind of stories of, like, you know, ancient arcane evil and lore and, like, you know, impossible situations. Again, my main problem still is that the resolution to the whole thing is so rushed that I just don't really think it's, you know... It's not a big issue for me, but like I just love how, like, you know, the vibe and the ambition and the just real kind of panache and whatever that they have on show here. I think it's just brilliant. I think it's just great.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It is an episode I think I will revisit a lot. I really want to show it to my friend who has not yet vibed with Doctor Who, because I think it might cause them to vibe, because it is like a very confident episode. And I feel like that's the thing we discovered rewatching series 5. It takes a while, but I think this series kind of like stomps its foot down very early on and says, Doctor Who is not this. Doctor Who is going to be this for the next, like, what, 8 years is going to be this? And the fact that it all started here is astonishing and really worthy of, like, recognition.
Mm-hmm.
I think also this season works really well as a singular season of television. You have each of the characters have arcs. And the thing I want to say my biggest surprise upon me watching series five was just how much I want more Rory. Like, Rory was such... When I was like thinking back about series five before we started rewatching, I was thinking Rory is kind of a nothing in series five, and then series six he becomes more of a character, and then series seven he's gone. It's a lie. Rory should have been in it more. The kids really want the Rory. Like that is my final conclusion from series five. More Rory. Put Rory in more stuff. If Matt Smith ever comes back or some bullshit. Poor guy, and they also drag Karen Gillian back, and if they don't drag Arthur Darvill, I think they will be doing a massive disservice, because I think Arthur Darvill is really the revelation for me. He's really, really good.
Mm-hmm. He's a lot of fun. So that's our things. What we're doing next is, if you wonder what we're doing next, I'll give you a list of what's coming up. So get back down to Bannerman Road right now, because Sarah Jane Series 4, it's on the horizon. Mm-hmm. Someone from the series may or may not be in an episode. They are. We already know it's another Doctor episode. After that, it's Christmas Carol. You know, ho ho ho, Merry Christmas. Then it's Series 6 Part 1. And what happens halfway through Series 6 Part 1? We say goodbye to Torchwood with Miracle Day.
Yeah, die. Yeah. Goodbye. you are the weakest link. Goodbye.
But then halfway, at the end, I think it's like the last two episodes of Miracle Day coincide with Series 6 Part 2. And then after that, after Series 6 Part 2, it's the last ever series of Sarah Jane, three stories. And then after that, we only have Class. And then, you know, there's no more televised spin-offs. That probably could be 2024. Unless we talk about doing like series 7, just so 2025 we start off with 12, and then potentially like finish the entire thing in 2026, but we'll see. So that's it now for now. Sarah Jane coming soon. I don't know when. We'll have to figure that out. But yeah, goodbye to a great season, and remember. Sorry, I don't know why I said that. I'm going to go and chat to these two people who are definitely going to be in every single series going forward. They'll definitely be mentioned again. Like, it's kind of funny that like they never mention her parents again at all after all this. It's probably, I don't know. If you got Danny Houston to play her dad, it would have been perfect. He would have come back every single season. You know, like, how's it going? But goodbye, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bye.
Danny Houston, bye. What do you see or you know?
Next time on Pod Tour, Who Cast?
The aliens are watching us. Waiting for the right moment.
My name is Dredd.
Oh, boy, Men in Black.
It's amazing. Spaceships.
Time travel's awesome, isn't it? I've got to do it more often.
Hello, Sarah Jane.
Oh, you've done it again.
Ah, ventilation shafts. That takes me back.
Together, we're unbeatable.
Clyde, I'm staring at your bum.
Oh, seriously? Shh.
That hurt.
Good morning.
If you're watching, just keep watching.
I don't like being tricked. Who are you?
I need your help to save the world.
Well, that is what I call a base.
Yes!
You're alright. Just chill out.
I knew Mr. Bell's invention would catch on, but a wireless telephone.
What's plan B?
It's just the two of us left in the whole wide world.
Wait till you see what I've got for you.
Nothing's going to make me miss this.